Welcome to another episode of Gestalten. I am Eric, and I'm joined by my colleague,
Martin. Hello, hello.
All right. Hello, hello. So welcome back from Asia, Martin.
Yes, as teased as just about 2 weeks ago, I think it was.
Yes, and, yes. And a lot's happened since you've been gone. You know, in 1 week, we've seen a embargoed releases on the I-Pace hits the new Jaguar I-Pace hitting the web and all of the magazines and so on, and it's gotten very, very positive reviews. And we've also seen the BMW 8 Series. Just recently, we saw the Audi A1. So there's a couple of new cars to discuss, and clearly the star of CES Asia as well. Certainly deserves a mention, the Byton K-Byte.
Exactly, and we will be talking about probably quickly about the Tesla shooting brake.
Yes, by Remitz
as right, well. Right. So, but let's talk a little bit more. I think let's start with the production cars, because I think, you know, the Tesla and the Byton, they're more like on a concept, or like, you know, not in this kind of big production phase. But let's talk I-Pace first. Obviously, you're in the UK at the moment, and let's be very, very honest. Jaguar is not the kind of company that is very, very big in Germany, from our perspective. So, what is the media saying about the I-Pace, and what do you personally think about it? Obviously, we've both seen it a few times already, but you know,
Clearly, I mean, the car made its official debut just before Geneva. They really killed it, because they were very smart in the sense that they captured the limelight before it was unveiled at a show, and then a few days later, it made its debut in Geneva. And when I first saw the car, it was very, very close to the concept car that was revealed, you know, about a year prior. I mean, it took those guys not very long, by the grand scheme of things, to kind of reinvent a new typology for the electric vehicle. And I think it's quite successful in everything that I've read and seen. I mean, this car definitely seems to exceed expectations from, you know, basic electric vehicle kind of expectation. And, you know, we've seen it driving, fording through rivers. I mean, you know, all sorts of things. I think what is most appealing, obviously, we're talking about design, is, you know, it's a somewhat, shall we say, new typology. It's certainly very new for Jaguar, in terms of, you know, its overall execution, its surfacing, its overall form. Because let's not forget, this is an electric car, right? So it's got to be very, very aerodynamic. And I think that they've done a very good job. I remember, however, you know, when I was sitting in it in Geneva, that it didn't seem, you know, as spacious as perhaps it could be. Obviously, there were a lot of things that contributed to the fact that it did feel spacious, and that was, there was this huge glass roof, right? I mean, the glazing in that car is everywhere.
Yeah.
And it seemed very spacious in that respect. But then when you actually sit in the back, it doesn't feel more spacious than a regular car with a large glass roof. And it seems like, although it looks to be very spacious from an exterior perspective, once you get inside, it's not as spacious as you'd imagine it to be. But nonetheless, I think Jaguar's hit it out of the park with this one. You know, there's talks, obviously, of it being a Tesla rival and so on. And, you know, when I was sitting in it in Geneva again, it seemed to be bang on in terms of quality. It's very good in terms of proportions. It's very good in terms of surface execution. And I think it will be a very, very good competitor to Tesla. And not to mention that it's probably going to undercut it somewhat in price.
Well, I think this is the biggest problem, to be very honest. I mean, it has come, I think, over the past few years, really, to this point that what, you know, Jaguar have been doing is like, it's a very good executioner. And I think it was a little bit let down in regards to, you know, materials, I would say maybe even production quality, to all these kind of things. But the most important thing is what you mentioned to, like, a Tesla competitor. And I think it's really hit the market on a very, very interesting spot when it comes to the fact of, you know, finding a good design that is still quite Jaguar, but at the same time it stands for something new. Can it compete with a Tesla? I'm just not so sure. I mean, Tesla design, you know, that depends very much on the people. If you like it or if you don't like it, I think that's the big problem, or, like, you know, the big challenge behind everything. But really, in terms of design, it's really, you know, going against the Model X at this moment in time, not against the Model 3. Is it as cool as a Tesla in terms of the perception? I don't know. And I think this is something that, you know, we will have to wait and see. Price-wise, I think it's too expensive. I think this is the biggest problem. It's really not, you know, that attractive in terms of buying it. You know, if you have to pay 80,000 euros or 80,000 pounds, yeah, whatever it is, it's just too expensive. And then the question comes along, you know, is a Jaguar on an electric level worth that much? Even though it looks, you know, I mean, we've seen it both in Geneva. I do like that car. I don't like everything in it, but I think it's a very, very good step forward in terms of in terms of this idea of an electric car, and that there's something quite distinct about it, even though the F pace is very, very close. So, you know, there's certain kind of elements that I like, maybe, you know, a few that I don't like. But the question is it just cool enough? Yeah. And I'm not so sure about that at the moment, especially compared with, you know, this kind of factor of Elon Musk being the modern day Steve Jobs and having this kind of cool kind of aura around him. And I think this is what is really making Tesla at the moment. Why do people like it that much? And so this is where it becomes interesting. And if it's really, you know, good for the market to have a Jaguar doing that, because let's be honest, like, you know, we will be talking about the Byton later, but the i3 of BMW and the i8, you know, they have been great ideas. The execution was very, very good, but in terms of sales numbers, not so much. Yeah, so
that's right.
This is the interesting part. Can Jag turn it around? And I would say at the moment, very, very tricky. Yeah, very, very, very tricky in the market. Just, you know, too expensive, because let's be very, very honest, 80 grand buys you a Porsche. So the question is, do you want to have a Porsche or do you want to have a electrified F-Pace? Yeah, that's the really big question.
Yeah. I mean, look, the thing is, in terms of price, it undercuts the Tesla Model X by, you know, starting price about 10 grand here in the UK. And that is, you know, I mean, we're talking entry level Tesla Model X now, okay? We're not talking dual motor and none of that, right? Because that's about 130K. So, but you're absolutely right about the weight and the cachet that the Tesla brand just basically rejoices in. And it's the, you know, Elon Musk and his cult following, and it's the whole image of the company just being a trendsetter, being a leader, even though, you know, there are many areas in which Tesla falls short, but they still have this cult following. Yeah. And, you know, Jaguar, I read the other day somebody that had reviewed it, and I think they sent out a tweet or something, and it was like, the first premium automaker, you know, Jaguar to unveil an electric car. And I was like, well, hold on, man. Like, Tesla's not premium?
BMW, yeah, obviously, exactly, at the same time. So
it was just like, all right. But, you know, it must be said, I think this was a British title. It had to be, right? Because everyone is so incredibly patriotic.
Yeah.
It's like you can't pick up a copy of Autocar without, you know, a Jaguar walking on water. You know, it's like, that's good to have that, you know, notion of patriotism within the UK. But, you know, and I mean, look, Jaguar is the biggest market for Jaguar is in the US. And, you know, they haven't caught on in China yet, and they're not, like, as sought after, but it is, you know, I mean, we're in a little island here in the UK. There's no way that they sell as many cars and as many models as they do in the US. So clearly this vehicle was made to, you know, get into the U.S. in terms of the vehicle, electric vehicle market. And whether or not it can compete there against Tesla, I don't know, you know, for the exact reasons that you outlined before. Does that make it less of a good car and less of a good design? No. But at the same time, as you, again, accurately mentioned, the i3 was a brilliant design. You know, did it catch on in terms of buying and, you know, success in the marketplace? Unfortunately not. So, you know, good design doesn't always equate to strong sales. And, you know, you have to cater to the market. You have to know who your customers are. And you also have to, you know, evidently it helps to have a strong cult following like Elon Musk.
Exactly. But let's, you know, when we discussed obviously the premium side and we just discussed BMW a little bit, let's talk about the 8 Series. I mean, we've seen multiple versions of that as concepts. You know, we have the 8 Series concept, the M8 concept, and now we've seen the final production version. What do you think? Does it get this kind of feeling of the old 8 Series, you know, that everybody kind of loved from BMW? That, you know, I know people that they say this was my first toy model car, you know, this old 8 Series BMW from, I don't know, what was it, 90s or 80s, something like that? Where, you know, what do you think of it, especially in the current circumstance with BMW and what's going on?
Basically, you know, and it's sad to say, but I mean, look, the original 8 Series is an icon, an iconic piece of automotive design. It was a gorgeous, gorgeous vehicle, and you know, there were a lot of things going for it. You know, the E31, as it was called, you know, was the first kind of model. And you know, early 1990s. I mean, that was a car with a, you know, a V12 power plant at its at its heart. You know, it was, but more importantly, it just, there were so many things that were novel in that car. You know, I mean, we all love pop-up headlamps, right? Which now, for, you know, safety reasons, you can no longer get. The way that that car was executed, it was just svelte beauty, right? I mean, it was just beautifully executed, very simple, a flowing, beautiful roof line. You know, everything about that car was just elegance, right? No B pillar. I mean, it was just a beautiful, beautiful car. But that was very simple. And because of that, aged very gracefully. Now, the new, you know, 8 Series, which you're right, we've seen revealed before. It was in concept form, debuted at last year's Villa d'Este. The M8, which we saw in Geneva, was apparently, you know, in Geneva, in Villa d'Este, rather, this year, we saw it driving around. So it is a finished model, though in Geneva, they had it with blacked out wheels, and so they didn't show an interior. Now, I think if we look at the new 8 Series, I think the interior is something that is definitely, you know, amazing, and very much of its day, just like the E31 interior was very much of its day. It is just, you know, a very nice place full of technology, the seats, the contrast, the colorways, everything about the interior of that car is quite nice. But, you know, it's, again, it's something that is a bit different than what BMW is kind of known for. And I think all of these derogatory comments that we're seeing come out of, you know, about this car is that it isn't what people have kind of come to know of BMW, and, you know, or come to expect of BMW. And so it's, you know, kind of lets them down in that respect. Now, I don't know. I mean, you know, if you look at the car from an exterior design perspective, I think it's very nice. You know, it's, you know, there are certain things that are, you know, a bit over the top. You know, the grill is huge. You know, it's just, it seems like it's trying too hard. But, you know, at the same time, it's, I think as a flagship vehicle, you know, it had to kind of try to move the game forward. And I think in terms of technology, in terms of its interior accoutrements, in terms of, you know, its overall kind of body surfacing and headlight technology, you know, from a technological perspective, this car definitely appears to move the game on. Now, I haven't seen it in person. I would love to, you know, get a chance to sit inside and drive it. You know, it's going to drive beautifully because BMWs do. And, you know, again, this is, you know, as a flagship, vehicle to sit in the BMW range. I mean, it doesn't look out of place in terms of what BMW's recently put out. Now, if that's appealing to you, then good. But
that's exactly the thing. You know, I think this is the big problem is we don't see that much. That BMW is moving forward as other companies. I think, you know, it's almost like, you know, we're celebrating Jaguar for going into these, I-PACE levels, electric levels. And, you know, it's kind of to a certain kind of because they have to. And on the other side, obviously, because, you know, that's a big market for them.
Yeah.
But we see a development, whereas with BMW, it's kind of stagnating a little bit. And for me personally, that's the 8 Series. It's a perfect kind of picture for that. You know, it's well executed. It has all the topics that BMW have this, you know, for what BMW has this great reputation for. But at the same time, you see, it's just like, hey, where is this all going? You know, right. And we saw this with the iX3 that, you know, we were quite critical of as well. And this is a very, very kind of step into this. So I'm really, really hoping that, Joseph Caban, who just recently took over not so long ago, you know, I'm very looking forward to kind of his first car, because those ones that we see at the moment, the 8 Series is a Karim Habib car, and you can, you know, I think this is clearly, you know, we see the craftsmanship behind it. We see that it's very, very well made. Mm-hmm. But you can see that it's part of this kind of strategy of what BMW have been doing over the past 2 years. And and I think this is really like, you know, high level criticism. Let's be very, very honest here. Shouldn't take this too seriously in the sense of just like we're completely bashing BMW here. But it's really about comparing to, like, you see the development of what, you know, Mercedes have been doing over the past 5-10 years, and see that kind of movement forward. And then I think that compared especially to that, you can see on sales numbers as well. Yeah. This is where it's becoming interesting. In that kind of regard. But let's move on a little bit, because we're talking a lot about these production cars at the moment, but let's talk about more of these concepts and a little bit of a small series production. And let's talk about the Tesla Shooting Brake, which was actually designed by someone we both know on a personal level as well, Niels van Roy, designer who's based actually in London. He did this project with, I think, a Dutch coach building manufacturer, building company.
Yes.
Remitz. Yeah. And they took the Tesla apart, the Tesla Model S, and they made a shooting brake out of it, or, you know, as the Germans call it, a Kombi in that regard. What do you think? I actually, you know, from my perspective, I like it. It's taking it further. It's like, you know, keeping or sticking true to what the Tesla is, and it looks actually very, very well made.
I haven't, unfortunately. Niels invited me out to the event. I think it's a great idea. First of all, because I know Niels, I know where he's coming from, and I know what it is that he's done. And he's basically reviving, shall we say, coach building. And, that is basically, this project came to him with an owner that wanted to do something that was out of the ordinary based on a Model S. And that's when his idea to come up with this shooting brake, proposal basically, came up, because the owner was pretty clear about what he wanted. And, you know, so he's been working on this for a bit of time. I think ultimately, you know, it's a well conceived and well resolved, job. Obviously, they did a quite a bit of work to the roof where they pulled it back from the A pillar rather than the B pillar. So the entire roof is new, to allow it to blend into the rear as it does. There's a few applications which I'm not entirely convinced about, but again, this is a one-off vehicle that I don't need to, I don't need to approve of. The one thing that I would say is apparent is that, the owner appears to really, really like chrome. And that is, to me, what was interesting, because there's a lot of ways that they could have chosen to treat the DLO at the rear, especially. But as Niels has said, there is, because it's a one-off custom build, there are a lot of ways that the owner, potential owner, could choose to outfit that vehicle. And so it doesn't have to be chrome. And it is in this instance, but it could be done in a variety of different ways. Now, the way that they chose to tackle this, I think, is good. I mean, the media response has been good. The fact that they were able to revisit the interior as well and make it very unique for the client is something that I think is also really nice, because of the fact that it goes that extra step, right? It's not just, we're going to take this and, just do the exterior and leave everything else alone. It's a really true, like, completely thought out revisit for the Model S.
Yeah, and I think, I was very, very critical in the last podcast when we spoke about the Ferrari when it comes to one-offs, in that kind of regard. But I want to say something quite positive about this one here, because this actually seems to be, a one-off situation where I can say, hey, this could technically, if Tesla really wanted to, make a lot of sense, for a long, bigger production level. So there is a certain kind of also inspiration, maybe for other car manufacturers, that this kind of idea of a shooting brake is not dead, as, a lot of people want to make us think that this is the situation. So it's really something that I do like the idea. Unfortunately, I haven't seen it myself yet, so I hope we will be able at some point in the future to actually do that. But I like the idea of really bringing some more inspiration to the industry and to the idea of a shooting brake. And it seems that there might be actually some follow-ups, if I read the news correctly, that they might be doing some more of them, and maybe we can then see how it would look like without the chrome and all these things. So that's going to be then interesting to see from that perspective. But
there's a lot of breath here to speak and to do a multitude of different things. But again, this is a very European thing, and apparently they're going to produce something like 20 of these cars. The reason why Tesla did SUV was because, the Model X is going to sell in far greater numbers than a wagon ever would in the home country, which is the US, all important.
Of course.
But as a one-off kind of coach build, it's very interesting to see what it is that they've done. And, from an aesthetic and proportion perspective, I really can't fault it. So, hats off to Niels and his team for creating something that was good and that got a hell of a lot of coverage. So good news for them.
It did. Yeah. It did, and speaking of coverage in a very, very big way, let's talk a little bit about CES Asia, and I think we should start actually when we're talking about these kind of coach build cars, concept cars. Let's talk about the big concept that was revealed actually at CES Asia, and I was very, very fortunate to be at the press event as well for the Byte and K-Byte, which is a sedan. Has a very, very wide stance. It looks very, very massive, very, very powerful when you stand in front of it. and had a few very, very interesting features, I would like to say, in, you know, from really seeing it up front. One has to say it was a it was an exterior only model, so they had, when you actually wanted to look inside, only, like, you know, in a little bit of shadows, you saw the kind of intentions of what can happen in the interior. So we can't really talk too much about the interior. I had the chance to speak to a few of the designers, fortunately, and they said, well, we're definitely going to bring in the really widescreen, you know, this kind of absolutely, I think they call it SED, like shared experience display, into the K byte as well. And we saw this display again into the into the first concept, this crossover concept that they had, which they now renamed into M byte, which is very, very interesting. But let's talk about the K byte. You obviously, you saw it on the pictures. What did you think of it, and what was your first initial impression of the whole thing?
I'd really like to hear your impression of the thing, because, to be honest, I mean, I'm looking at it through pictures, you know, on a screen, because I wasn't in Shanghai, unfortunately, to take it in. Now, if you want to just talk about my initial kind of picture, quick gut reaction, I thought it was really nice, but I don't know in terms of, like, you know, where it fits in terms of size. That to me is kind of, but otherwise, I mean, in terms of, you know, surfacing, I mean, we've got like full volumes, really, like, and something that's very on trend, which is the kind of recessed surface in through the doors. What I loved was the front face of that car, because being an electric vehicle, it is reinterpreting the grille, you know, because obviously cars, we've seen a few cars without grills, they look weird. And, you know, most of the time, grills in electric cars are not, you know, useful in terms of providing a function. But they are nonetheless a very important part of creating a design identity for the vehicle. And, you know, that's the face of the car. It's like, you know, it's like you walking around the street with no nose. It's going to make you stand out, and probably for the wrong reasons. So I think from an initial perspective, the front end of that car is great. I think it's got a lot of really interesting details. But, you know, I'd really like to hear what you thought of it, looking at it in person, and what it was like to be around it.
I mean, I have to say, it's, you know, we will be talking about something, and if you, something, you know, in this kind of, you know, similarity perspective later on as well. I think it's really interesting is when you see it from a side view, from the traditional kind of, you know, you look into the body side, and you just think, it's like, you know, is it really that new? What is so special about this whole thing? But as you really have, you know, just mentioned, it's about the details. Yeah. And the grill for me now is a detail as well, and all these kind of, you know, really, really cool, you know, playing with the lights and the LEDs and all these kind of things. It's just what I like about it, it gives the car a distinct look. That's the one thing, but it's also not over exaggerated. Yeah, you know, when it comes, sometimes, you know, a lot of you see it with the Mercedes, I think, you know, the EQ series, you get into this kind of point of just like, oh, you know, we have this big screen in front and we can do something cool with the logo and all these things. So it's a bit tricky to do that. And I think with the Byton, what I did like was really this kind of, you know, kind of simplicity of the grill as well. It was very simple, but at the same time, very, very well made. A fantastic kind of feature that doesn't really come out in that kind of way is pretty much on the sides, where you used to have the side mirrors. Yeah. They actually moved them down a little bit. They had pop out LiDAR sensors. So pretty much the idea was, when, you know, when I spoke to the guys, they were just like, so what would happen? You know, they saw these cars those kind of cars in Beijing as well, that have the LiDAR sensors on the roof of the car, and then they're kind of in this really weird ice cream truck style, you know? And so they really try to include them into actually the design. Yeah, so that they are actually a design element, and especially those kind of pop-up things on the side with the little cameras on top for the mirrors. That was really, really, really cool, because A, we have not seen that before. Yeah, that's the that was really something completely new, even wondering through CES, like nobody in terms of the technology or supplying perspective, you know, had come up with this kind of idea. And it was just generally well made because, you know, you can pop them in into the actual body side. You can drive the car in by yourself because you don't need them. And if you want to go into autonomous mode and this kind of semi-autonomous mode, you really have, you know, you can pop them out and they can become a design element in that regard. So that was...
Yes. Good. And that's very much what happens with all of these sensors. I mean, you know, obviously there's quite a lot of design details that are functional, but that have become a design elements, like the cant rail, for example, which then provides this kind of spoiler around the rear, the backlight of the car in order to guide air into that area and make it more aerodynamic. But then there's also these, you know, the way that they decorated these, you know, LiDAR guards and LiBO, as they're calling it, which are basically the LiDAR sensors on the vehicle that are really, you know, they're not hidden. They're actually used to highlight these elements, you know, using different colorways to not only inform passerby, but also it's like a very biting identifier.
That was indeed really good. And it was literally something where technology is becoming, you know, part of the design. It's not like, you know, this is technology has nothing to do with design. This design has nothing to do with technology. Like you clearly see that those guys are really thinking about how to integrate that. Yeah. And this was, you know, really, really good fun. There was a lot of people, you know, really interested in this whole thing. But, you know, we, you know, my colleagues and I, we had a very, very good kind of a time with the car. And we, you know, we were able to talk to Benoit Jacob as well, a number of the team, the guys from the team of the car. So we got a really good overview on this. But there's something I would like to mention. I think this is something that people don't really see on the pictures. There is this really, really great effect. And I hope most of our listeners can actually at some point in the future look at that kind of car in person. If you are actually in the front of the car and go into like a three-quarter view, the C pillar has a little bit of a step in, you know, before it actually hits the trunk area. And this is such a cool effect because if you stand in front of it in this kind of three-quarter view, it actually looks like the car is a hatchback. It doesn't really look like a sedan. It gives this like a really, really cool, you know, visual effect that you just don't see in, you know, I haven't really seen that one before. If any of our listeners, you know, you know, has a kind of a similar car in mind that maybe has done that, but it was absolutely fantastic. I was talking to the chief exterior designer, Ernesto Rupa, and I was just like, you know, man, like how this is fantastic. Like, how did this happen? And he was like, well, you know, this was something that we've worked on, you know, for quite some time. And it's a really, really nice effect because it gives this car so much more depth than you would just see it from this kind of side view and everything. And I think it's a perfect example of you see it on pictures and you might say, you know, right away, I like it or I don't like it, but it's those little kind of details that make this whole thing very, very interesting, you know. And this is for me, you know, to kind of, you know, include this into the whole CES kind of perspective. This is something that we have not really seen at CES in terms of cars, our details. Yeah, it's more about really technology, how to include this kind of technology, but not that's in terms right. of how to include the design properly with the technology. And I think this is a good kind of example how things can, you know, can be done. And from my personal perspective as well, you know, you can say, you know, we might have seen something like this before, especially with, you know, with the side views and stuff like that. But this once again is like, it's really about the details. Yeah. And when we really talk about the details, this is what interests us nowadays in the cars and,
Yeah. And the design integration, I mean, you know, like you said, it's really easy to slap some type of, you know, big LiDAR thing on top of a car and without, you know, considering how it's going to integrate in the design. Yes, it serves a function, but it should also really live within the design. So, you know, like little sensors that pop up like little fins, like on Faraday's concepts. We saw that was like an identifier for them. This could very much become a Byton identifier. The cant rail, the C pillar element, as you mentioned, where you know it just becomes that, you know, way of identifying the car, not only as an efficient electric car, but something that really provides an aerodynamic enhancement for the vehicle that not only does that from a functional perspective, but also looks great and is an individual like element. And I think that's really what's needed is integration of some of these new technologies and new elements that really work well into the design of a vehicle, not just some tacked on thing because you need it to be there.
Exactly. And, you know, from the general perspective of then, you know, placing this whole idea of like, you know, technology and design within CES Asia, there's a negative example as well. And there was this, a company, or a car that was called Hanergy, which is a very, very funny kind of name and was, you know, we will probably link in the description, like some of the pictures, that we took for it, but it's a solar panel car. And, you know, solar panels in terms of technology and in terms of, you know, bringing them onto cars is nothing new. I think a lot of schools tried to do that already. There were a few like, you know, concept cars that played around with this kind of idea. But what we've seen recently in terms of design, and this is exactly the thing when it comes to details again, you know, there's the Hanergy car, there is the Sono Motors car, which is, you know, developed down here in Munich. But you can really see with those kind of, you know, with those kind of vehicles that it's really becoming a problem of integrating this kind of technology properly into a product. Obviously, you know, solar panels have their own problem that they're, you know, quite stiff as far as I know. And, you know, you cannot really, you know, make nice surfaces and all these kind of things, but still at the same time,
right.
I don't see as much, you know, ingenuity as, you know, these kind of LiDAR sensors or whatever on how to really include them into a design. And this is the interesting thing because, you know, we saw this at CES in Vegas and we saw it again at CES in Asia, is that, yeah, we're moving on with technology. Like, you know, technology, what is possible nowadays is absolutely fantastic. But we can very, very clearly see, and, you know, like the solar panel cars, Hanergy, Sono Motors, like, you know, even a lot of the electric cars in that kind of regard, robotics, autonomous ideas and stuff like that, are they really playing, you know, that much with, you know, integrating them from a design perspective as well? And obviously that's easy for us to say just from a design perspective, but
just look at it.
But you know, this was really the thing, and I think this is what really stood out with the Byton, was this kind of integration of, you know, technology into design and what it could look like. And there was not really that much more, you know, that much else on, you know, at CES Asia where I really say it really included design and technology. And we saw all these kind of cool robotic fish and stuff like that. We saw ideas about, you know, autonomous stuff and, like, you know, some really cool things that I think will come into the car eventually in the next few years. This was really the point of CES again. It's just like, are those people really thinking about, and not just from a car perspective, but you can also say this from a product perspective of, you know, bringing technology and design together, or is it just about, let's say, usability?
Yeah. I mean, look, the thing is, I think we're talking about two very different markets, right? I mean, it's CES in January in the US. When I was walking around there, it seemed to me like there was a hell of a lot of pie in the sky thinking where people were like, oh yeah, you know, we're going to do this, or, you know, we're going to show this. And you're like, all right, so, when is that going to actually potentially be, viable? You know, when can we walk into a store and buy that? And it was like, oh, you know, I don't know, it's maybe like 5, maybe 10 years down the line, you know, if that. It's all just kind of a lot of new technology companies, because technology is so much of the now, exhibiting there because they have to be there and because, you know, this is their chance. Whereas in China, and what I've seen, you know, again, I wasn't walking around on the show floor, but it seems like some of the things that they're showing are much closer to potentially becoming reality in you know, the next few years, just as such as the level of the pace of China as a market in general. They want to do something, they get it done. And it just seems like, you know, maybe there's less regulation, maybe there's a couple of things that facilitate that. But I think it is much more of a, we can see this happening in the next few years.
Definitely. And I think this is also very, very China. I mean, we talked about this a little bit in the first podcast and, you know, really getting this idea, like getting something onto the street, you know, getting it to the people is even more important in China. And I think, you know, when you speak to the people at Baidu, and, you know, you saw this in some interviews as well, they said very, very clearly, okay, so this car, you know, yeah, we could produce that, you know, but we have to finish car, you know, the first car before we go into the second one. So there is this clear kind of intention of thinking about, hey, yeah, we can do that. And I think this is then the very, very quick, you know, the essence of CS Asia as well. It's much, much more like a consumer exhibition rather than the, let's say, industry exhibition that it is in Vegas. Yeah, because Vegas, mm-hmm. I think, was, you know, there was a lot of beta stuff there. There was, you know, a lot of ideation there, whereas at CS Asia, it was really for the consumers. Yeah, and really stuff that you can buy, like loads of drones, like, you know, drone style, you know, things in that kind of regard. So yeah. I think that really sums it up. In that kind of full context on what CES Asia was like, and I'm very, very, to be honest, very, very excited to go back again and see how it develops. Yeah, I think this is really going to be interesting. But I wanted to bring something up because we talked about the Baidu for a little bit, but I saw something very, very interesting, and I'm sure you saw it as well, and that was Derek Jenkins' Instagram post of comparing the Lucid and the Baidu K-Byte. And obviously it sparked a little bit of controversy because they used, I think it was the same tree or something like that in the whole situation. But I'm a little bit in the situation. I've seen the Baidu and I've seen the Lucid as well. I don't think if you really stand in front of them with all the details and stuff like that, there is a lot of difference in terms of the cars and in terms of, you know, the market that they're aiming for. But it seems that, you know, plagiarizing, or, you know, the topic of plagiarizing is not that. And we have seen that a little bit as well with GAC kind of, you know, having a copycat of the Volkswagen Cedric model as well. Yeah. So it's really, really interesting that this has kind of popped up because it was a little bit unexpected. We, you know, I think since the Lincoln and Bentley controversy couple of years ago, whatever that was.
Years ago, yeah. I mean, Luke Donkervolk was still at Bentley because he's the one that made that comment on Facebook that then went viral. And, you know, I mean, you can't help but be inspired. Designers can't help but be inspired by other products that are successful and that are out there. Now, if I look at the Lucid and I look at that and I look at the Byte and K-Byte side by side, as Derek's put it on his Instagram page, you know, there is some similarity. I mean, like the contrast colored cant rail, for example, that runs into the back. You know, the body side treatment, for example, does have some similarities. But, you know, there's a lot of things that are different about that car. And if we move into, you know, what technology is enabling us to do in terms of radically thin lights, for example, like we could never have considered years ago. Yeah. I mean, you could get away with thin sliver of lamps now, you know. So a lot of cars are going to start looking similar if they take advantage of technology. I think there's enough of a difference within both cars to, you know, really kind of tell them apart, you know, from one from the other. Yeah. And I think one is also considerably larger than the other. And I think, you know, if you just kind of look at that picture You know, with especially because it's got this this purple tree in the background.
That was really funny. That purple tree was really funny. And and let's be very honest. I mean, the Lucid is a great car. I mean, you know, I remember when I saw it for the first time, I was like, wow, this is fantastic.
No, absolutely,
and
it's gorgeous, particularly the interior. I mean, that car is very well resolved and perfectly suited for the U.S. market for which it was conceived and where it was designed. But I think it's a considerably larger car than the K-Byte. And I could be wrong with that about that. But, you know, proportionally, they're a bit different. You know, I think if I dare say so, the Lucid seems to be more stately, more of like a long distance kind of cruiser, whereas the Byton seems like a sportier car, in particular because of its proportions, you know, its front overhang and just the way that it is, you know, proportionally. And so I think, yes, there are some similarities. You can't kind of, you know, look past particularly the body side surfacing. But you know, I think they're enough to make it kind of stand out and be unique. So I don't think that there's, you know, design plagiarism going on. But again, you know, designers can't help but be influenced by other products that are out there, particularly.
Of course, and, but let's be very, very honest. I mean, both are, you know, from what I've seen and, like, you know, the kind of impression that I had, both are very, very good products. But at the same time, we also have to say that neither of them is on the market yet. That's obviously very, very tricky to always discuss those kind of things if nothing's on the market, you know. I do, you know, to a certain kind of degree, that pink tree was absolutely funny and hilarious. I think everybody was very, very amused by that. But at the same time, I think if they would have included, like, you know, front and rear pictures and maybe, like, you know, a three-quarter view and stuff like that, you would have seen that they're quite fundamentally different, or at least, you know, from the detailing of, you know, very, very different from each other. I mean, you know, in the end, you know, Derek did a great project with his guys over there. And let's be very, very honest. I think, you know, we all want to see more in that kind of regard. But we do know that a few of the guys have left over there already. And I think, you know, that leads us to one of our favorite sections, which we didn't do, unfortunately, last time. We were just a little bit late. Like, we had this piece of information already, but we were just too late to discuss it. Let's talk about who's where, and let's talk first and foremost, before we talk about the big one that shocked us a little bit, let's talk about Yamada-san, former Mazda designer, who has obviously a very, very big following, and I think who's very, very popular in the design world, has just moved to Chang'an, which is quite a surprising move, I think.
Yes. I think... I don't know if it's as surprising as some would imagine. You know, obviously, you know, I received that press release in my inbox. I was away traveling, and I never bothered to follow up with it for myriad reasons. But it is an interesting appointment, but it's not one that comes without some history. You know, Atsuhiko Yamada is a very gifted designer. Obviously, he spent some time at Isuzu. Then he went over and did a bunch of advanced design stuff over in Japan for Mazda. He's been in the industry for a very, very long time. And the fact that he came over as is now design chief of Chang'an's V brand passenger cars, and he's going to be mostly based in Japan and China, Chongqing, China, I believe. One of the things that's really interesting, I think, to me is, you know, obviously he'll be traveling extensively between China, Japan, and Europe, but one of the things that what many people don't know, what the media so far failed to convey, is that Chang'an is a huge state-owned company, and its main design center is based in Turin. So the design studio in China is a satellite studio.
Yeah.
So that to me is very, very interesting stuff. But nonetheless, I mean, the design studio in Turin, where, you know, they call it Chang'an's European Design Studio, but it is the main design hub, is run by a very nice man. His name is Chen Zhang. And I had the opportunity to meet him while I was working as a consultant in Italy a few years ago. And the fact that he chose to hire Yamada-san as over there in to bring him on board as part of the Chang'an design team is not without precedent. I mean, he's done quite a number of projects with Chris Bangle. That's how I met Atsuhiko Yamada in the past. He was responsible for Bangle's most recent vehicle, which was unveiled in at the Los Angeles Auto Show, or just before it, at the Art Center, the Reds EV was actually created by Yamada-san, and that exterior design is something that is polarizing a lot of people's opinions, and but you know there is history there, and so. Obviously, Atsuhiko and Mr. Chen Zhang's paths have crossed, and now he's on board. And I think, you know, he will be doing some good things if he's allowed some leeway, you know, because he is a brilliant designer, and he'll just pull things out and drastically out of his comfort zone. I mean, Chris Bangle mentions how during the creation of that Reds EV project, Atsuhiko got gravely ill, and he did. He spent several days over in his hotel room, and unable to eat anything but soup. And but the thing is, he is able to get out of creating things like the Taiki concept and the Senku concept and whatever other, things that he's done in the past. I mean, he was very influential with Mazda design, but he's not a one trick pony, right?
Yeah.
He's able to do quite a lot of different things. And so I think if he is on board and he's got the ear of the board in the, one of the largest state owned Chinese automakers, he'll be able to do some very cool things. And Chang'an is, I mean, they're hiring like crazy. They've got definitely some ambition to do some very good stuff. And I both know a lot of people that have gone there recently. And, we know people that have left there as well. So there's a lot of interesting things going on over there at Chang'an.
Yeah, and of course, I mean, we do wish him all the best to really succeed. And I think, it's a good platform, Chang'an, and it's really in what you make of it in that kind of regard. And I think he's one of the guys that can really push this forward. So all the best of success and luck, obviously, to him over there in China and Japan and in Turin. Mm. But let's talk about the big bomb we've kind of got almost almost as it happened in that kind of regard. And
yes.
Giles Taylor left Rolls-Royce, and it was pretty much from what has been communicated by BMW is that he handed in his resignation, and the day after he was gone. Quite a bit of surprise. I had the chance to speak to a few people. They were very, very surprised that this actually happened. And I think we should not really speculate where he's going. There's no official word there. Speculation, doesn't help us, and we don't want to cause any kind of rumors and stuff like that. But that was very, very surprising, especially that shortly after the Cullinan came out. And obviously we were quite a bit, not very, very happy, both of us, about the Cullinan last time we spoke, but that was extremely surprising that he left.
Yeah, well, I do think the Cullinan missed a trick, but at the same time, I don't think I think it's extremely presumptuous for all of these media sites to be saying, oh, you know, the Cullinan had something to do with it. That is probably, I'm not going to say entirely, but I think that's bullshit, to be honest. You know, I think in this day and age, and the reason why so many people are not attributed and given credit to the work that they do, is something that I wrote about on my website, is because they get poached. And, you know, I think Giles, like, I mean, look, let's take a look back at Giles' career. I mean, because, you know, this is a guy that he was at beforehand. I mean, he spent 10 years at Jaguar, right? Mm-hmm. This is a guy that joined Rolls-Royce not that long ago. I remember writing a story in July 2012. When he was appointed. So we're talking 6 years ago, less than, where he was actually appointed head of then, it was exterior design over at Jaguar, at Rolls-Royce rather. And so, you know, when he made that move, no one could anticipate that less than a year later, he would step into the top role you know, head take over for Ian Cameron. And so basically that happened. And since then, you know, I mean, everyone, well, I think everyone listening to this podcast knows the gestation period of new vehicles, especially production cars. They're not created overnight. So again, a lot of, widespread kind of inaccuracies in terms of timeline for what Taylor was actually responsible for. You know, a lot of the things that that kind of hit the dealership floors, if you want to call it a dealership, at Rolls-Royce, stores that welcomed in the new Phantom and the Cullinan, as well as the Dawn and the Wraith before that. Giles had probably zero to do with the Wraith and the Dawn at his, you know, at their inception. You know, I mean, he did play obviously an integral role in the 103 EX concept, which was the concept car that the Vision Next 100 concept car, which was, you know, really polarized opinion in terms of what it is that you know, the Rolls-Royce brand would stand for in the future. It was a good story. The final kind of, you know, design of the vehicle, you know, is polarizing at best. But I think, you know, for Giles, I think, and you know, I don't want to speculate too much, but it would appear that someone in his position, you know, working for a ultra luxury automaker at the helm of Rolls-Royce for 6 years now, was given a better opportunity. You know, he was presented with something that he just couldn't refuse. You know, and you know, as another thing that people have mentioned or not mentioned or inaccurately mentioned is the fact that Rolls-Royce is based in Munich. You know, the design team is not in Goodwood. You know, the entire design operations is right close to home at BMW Group. Perhaps Giles was a little homesick. You know, maybe he decided that it was time to go home and he was offered a good opportunity there. Now, where would he go then? Crew? Highly unlikely. You know, so I don't know. For someone in his position, as I mentioned, you know, leading an ultra luxury brand like Rolls-Royce, it's kind of hard to imagine him going to something outside of the super luxury sector. But again, within Munich, we both know that there's a lot of automakers, startup car makers in particular, that are looking for design talent, and you know, people that have experience at companies like BMW, you know, that have really moved you know, into that area of super luxury, and that is going to be a growing area in the future. really could make a great deal out of their career by joining one of these startups. So,
yeah, exactly. And
I think it was really very interesting to learn that.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we'll obviously report on it and we'll talk about it once it's very, very clear what Gilles is doing, but also, of course, what BMW is going to do, because no word is out yet who's going to replace him. So that's going to be very, very yes. interesting. But I think we wanted to say something quickly in our own interest. Of course, you know, we're talking about these who's where, and we're very, very interested, and we want to hear your opinion about, you know, what you think. But also, of course, we are working in this area of who's where to a certain kind of degree as well. Mm-hmm. So we do have yes. a few open positions at the moment. So if you are working in interior design, in particular, color and trim design, VR as well is something that we're very, very deep into at the moment. Please do get in touch with us, because, you know, if you are interested in doing something else, please do let us know. We were all very, very happy to talk to you about this. And and I think that is pretty much it for, you know, podcast number 3 of the Gestalten podcast. Yeah. That is taking a nice form by now. And
yes. I think we're finally finding a flow. I mean, it's taken us a little time. You know, it took us one full episode, maybe even a full month, to come up with a name. But I think, you know, just to touch base on these, you know, yes, we, you know, it's interiors are ever more important. If you look at car design, obviously there's still the exterior that draws people in, but interior, there's so much going on. And there's so many opportunities that we have become privy of and are privy to. If you don't already know, you're in this industry, you probably should, is that the best brand, the best positions are never advertised. It is always something that is, an insider kind of tool. And that's where we exactly. come in. So by all means, give us a call. Drop us a line. You can reach us on the usual avenues. So for me, it's at Form Trends. For Martin, it's at Concept House with a K. We're going to be putting this, obviously, in various social media channels. And you can look us up and hit us up. So we look forward to hearing from you if you're looking for that yeah. next step. If you've got something to offer, we'd love to hear exactly. from you. So. Look out for the next podcast, which is going to be hitting in, a few weeks' time.
Yeah, in a couple of weeks, maybe a little bit longer than that, depends on our schedules. But we will also try a little bit of a tease. I'm not quite sure if we will do it for the next one already, but we will be trying to bring on some guests as well that yes, we can discuss a few things as well. So that's something that we're looking very, very much forward to. And these words in that regard. Thank you very much for listening. Eric, thank you very much for joining me once again in this kind of regard. My name is Martin. And if you have any feedback, any questions, you know how to get in touch with us. And so we're looking forward to hear you, or that you guys listen to us the next time as well. Speak to you soon. Or hear you soon.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye.